Welcome to the But You're Wrong podcast. I'm Greg DiNicola.
I'm Keith Padilla.
Make sure you check us out every Wednesday, every Saturday on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Be sure to check out But You're Wrong Facebook page, facebook.com/ButYou'reWrong. Please give us a like on there and follow us on Twitter at BYW Podcast.
And on YouTube at youtube.com/BYW Podcast. If you like Keith, make sure you check him out on the Amazon Kindle Marketplace. We now join the But You're Wrong podcast, already in progress.
But then I was like, well, wait, is he still alive and just in hiding? Because he was like, he was a recluse for a long time. And I couldn't remember if he was still a recluse or if he had just died.
Yeah, no, he lived in like some big mansion in like southern England. And no one saw him. He was just... He hung out at his house, and I think like once in a while he'd go out like hunting or something, but that was all he did. Like no one ever saw him other than that.
Yeah, well, there was a guy that impersonated Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a movie about it. I want to say it's called Color Me Kubrick, and it's John Malkovich is playing the guy that impersonated him, and he would Color Me Kubrick, and he played a guy, and it's based on a true story, but it's...
So did Kubrick send this guy around to be him?
No, the guy just decided to impersonate, It was Alan Conway, was the guy, I think.
Oh, I wasn't sure if, like, Kubrick decided to send someone out as, like, a body double because he didn't wish to be out in public.
No, oh, no.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been, but no, that wasn't it.
You like Saddam Hussein?
That would have been funny, but no. But he would go around and impersonate the guy. And he, let's see. He had been out of the public view for, Kubrick had been out of the public view for 15 years. He had also worn a beard since the late 60s, and Conway was shaven, making the hoax easier to pull off. Like, everybody knew Kubrick with the beard, so then he was like, I just shaved. I finally decided to get rid of it. But he pretended to be that and promised people roles and, like, interviews, and, like, he'd be like, oh, I'll get you this role in this movie, or, like, try and get investors for money, and he would get him as, get him drinks and stuff. He was gay, and I think he was also using it to get some sex. So,
I'm trying to think of, I'm trying to picture Kubrick without a beard, but I can't because I don't think I've ever seen a picture of him without it.
So you want? There's a lot to cover here. Do you want to get into our Halloween episode?
Our very spooky Halloween episode where things might jump out of the closet at you, like Keith when he's coming out of the closet.
Put my pants down, but they're just around my ankles. So as I come charging out, I trip on them and I fall.
he's just waddling like he's wearing shackles, but it's really just his pants.
Yeah, and I got a hard on, and I actually break my penis. So I got to wear it in a cast for a long time. It's one of those rare times where they're like, it's very rare, but yes, the penis has broken. We will have to put it in a cast.
I remember being a kid. Well, not a kid, but I was probably like 18 or something. I was working as a cook. And I remember I was with one of the other cooks, and he was older. He was probably like 40. And I was like, hey, can you break your boner? And he just goes, no, I've tried.
Who says that?
I don't know. And I was just like, okay. And he was just like, just dead serious. He was just like, no, I've tried.
No, trust me. I've tried this.
Yeah. But
But anyway, we'll talk about that now. So did you get a chance to actually watch Room 237? Or did you forget?
I did not get a chance, but
all right.
I also forgot, I guess.
Well, it's all right, because, I mean, I watched it a second time, and I'm thinking you probably shouldn't watch it.
Really?
I mean, maybe, but I'm just going to tell you stuff. And it's one of those ones where it's really hard to understand what is going on, because the setup of it is they have, I think it's five guys. Well, it's four guys and a girl, I think. And
they, sounds good already.
They come charging out of a closet. And
is it European?
Now, there's four guys and a girl, and they're telling their theories about The Shining.
Okay.
I don't even think we mentioned that we were going to talk about The Shining. I put it out on Facebook and Reddit and stuff to see if anybody had some information or things that they wanted to share out there. I got some hits which I'll bring up. But talking about The Shining, which is we talked a little bit about it before. It's one of your favorite movies.
Yeah, I was going to say, we talked about it not too long ago when we were talking about Kubrick. And I believe I stated then that Shining is in my top 10.
Right. And that got me thinking of that I hadn't seen it in a while, so I should watch it again. So I watched it again. And then I was thinking we should do something for Halloween, because this will be coming out the day before. So we'll talk about The Shining, because that's kind of it's a movie, and we like talking about movies. And you know, I'm sure there's a dick joke in there somewhere in there.
I guarantee it.
And there's it's kind of Halloween-y.
I mean, it's creepy.
It's a horror movie. So why not dive into it? But Room 237 has also come out, and it's available on Netflix Instant. And it is the four guys and a girl, and they are trying to explain their theories, which, let me tell you something, all their theories are correct. And they come right out and say it. All their theories...
Oh, okay, so they're all infallible?
Yeah, all their theories are absolutely 100% correct.
Oh, okay, that's good, because, you know, you wouldn't want to have any... dissent on the topic or anything right. like that.
Yeah. They all also say that they can't believe that nobody else has seen this. They don't know why nobody else has seen this.
Oh, why they haven't caught up on or caught the same things that they noticed?
Exactly. Yeah, why they think it's ridiculous that nobody has realized these things before. So,
well, I mean, I'm sorry, we're just not as smart as them, I guess.
Right. Obviously. What happens is, though, the documentary is very poorly put together, because instead of doing like face-to-face interviews, it's just all voiceover. But
okay.
They also intertwine all the theories together. So sometimes you're not exactly sure who's speaking. Like, you know when the girl's speaking.
Yeah.
Or the woman, I guess I should say. You know when she's speaking.
How old is this girl, 45?
Yeah, she's probably 45. Because I'm pretty sure she said that she saw the movie when it first came out. So she is definitely...
It's like when Colleen's going out with the girls and they're all 50.
Yes. This may very well be one of the girls that my mom went out to lunch with. Nice. Probably not, but then all the guys get intermixed, so you're never really sure who's talking and who's giving their theory, because they only put the names up at the beginning, and then you're like, oh, okay, but two of them sound a lot alike.
Great.
So it's very confusing. So, but basically, the whole point of the movie is that, I guess, all at the same time, The Shining is about... the American genocide of Native Americans and all the atrocities that Native Americans had committed. It's about the Holocaust. It's about, I'm trying to remember what the woman's thing was. Her thing was like, that one was the only one that I was like, okay, this is believable, because it's all about the floor layout and stuff. Although some of her things I didn't entirely buy, but it's all about the floor layout and things that Kubrick did to make you feel unsettled in that space. Which I'll buy.
Okay.
And then let's see. There's another guy, which I'm not sure what his... I don't remember what the one guy's thing is. But then the last thing was that it is a movie about how Kubrick felt and the things that he was dealing with when he... Are you ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
Faked the moon landing footage.
Okay. So, I tell you right off the bat, anything that that particular person had to say about what the movie's about, I'm going to immediately discount.
Okay. Okay. But here's the thing. I don't know if you know this, but when he first saw 2001 A Space Odyssey, it made him want to be a filmmaker because he had a religious experience. He was so stunned and blown away by it that he could not leave his seat. And an usher actually came to pull him out of the theater because he couldn't leave. He was so just blown away by it.
I mean, do you know the name of this guy?
I'm looking it up right now to verify. Because he's the one that sounds like another, like I think one of the other guys. So let me double check here. I believe his name is Jay Widener. Weidner.
So this guy basically had a religious epiphany and an orgasm at the same time while watching 2001.
Yes.
I mean, again, we've discussed 2001. I'm a fan. I know you're a fan. I don't think it's the meaning of life.
No, I have a lot of questions about it.
I do too. And I don't know. This guy, this Jay Widener or whatever his name is, sounds... I feel like him and I might not get along.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he was also saying that what he was doing was, with 2001, was preparing himself to fake the moon landing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he was practicing techniques with which to fake the moon landing. Now, let me tell you this. If he was doing that, the moon landing footage should have looked a lot better. Like, it should look a lot better, but it doesn't.
Oh, he'll tell you that he did that on purpose to reflect the technology available, blah, 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 blah. But anyways, I can't even get into that one. It's too stupid to even...
Oh, but the guy has some other good points, which we're going to talk about.
Okay. Now, two things that you touched on earlier, though, I'll say about this. The genocide of the Native Americans, that is touched upon.
Yes.
In the movie. And I will not – I don't necessarily think it's about the genocide. Like, I don't think it's about that, about the genocide of the Native Americans. But it definitely is a topic within the movie. I think a lot of the – during the – some of the scenes, especially as the movie goes on, when Jack's going more and more crazy – a lot of the rooms that they're in have like Indian motifs in them. And a lot of the music, the drums and the rattling and stuff like that is kind of, Indian music like.
Well, there's a lot of artwork and stuff in there too. That has like Native American stuff. And he says even when he's giving them the tour that it was built on a, Native American burial ground.
Right. And it says they had to repel a couple of attacks while building it.
Yeah.
And so I won't discount that one because there is definitely I don't think it's about the killing of the Native Americans, but it's not about it.
I think
if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think it's more about the, and I think that might also have been an element that was in the book.
Yes.
I haven't read the book, but I'm pretty sure that was from what I've
read. I have read the book.
So I think that kind of goes back to the, oh, well, it was built on Native American burial ground. So there's a lot of like bad juju there.
Right.
So I think that has something that, you know, there's that energy there, but they go to a certain level in room 237 where it's like, this is exactly like what it's about. Because they even go into, I always forget the summer caretaker's name. It's like Watson or something, right?
Oh, the,
like he's in the movie for like 10 minutes.
The head of the, shit. Yeah. It's a really generic, like, blue blood name.
Yeah, it's not. Well, it's not like the guy that he goes to interview with. It's not the guy that has like the JFK wig.
Oh, okay.
It's the other guy. Mean that. It's the other guy that they bring in.
Oh, during the interview?
Yeah, they bring him in. He's there for a couple minutes, and then when they show up, when he actually gets to the job, and he drives them there. And yeah. And they're walking around. He's there. And they're like, no, I always feel like he represents the position of the Native Americans during that time when the hotel would have been built, because he's always following behind in the group. And I'm like, I don't know. I think he might have just been being polite.
I don't know.
Like, that's one of the times where I go, I think we're reading too much into things now. Because the guy is literally in the movie for, I want to say, like, 5 to 10 minutes at most.
Yeah. Yeah, it's to the point where I've seen the movie 100 times and I can barely even recall. I know who you're talking about. I can barely even recall what he looks like, though.
But there is literally a part in the documentary that is dedicated to him. There's a little section that they dedicate to talking about him and what he means in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think so.
But to me, he's like a throwaway character.
Yeah.
To me, it's like trying to explain what Ferris Bueller's Day Off is about by analyzing the garage workers. It is that same level of thinking.
Yeah. No, you're right. Now the other thing, the Holocaust. I don't see that at all. I don't see how that has anything to do with it.
Well, there were many references to the number 42 in the movie.
Okay.
You see the number 42 a lot. Now, 42, correct me if I'm wrong, but it has another significance, correct? Like a baseball significance.
Oh yeah, true.
Because it appears on a jersey in one of the things. Yeah. When Danny is talking to his little friend, and it appears on that jersey, and then it supposedly appears in other times too. But like that's kind of a stretch, and I think they mention like was built or like everything's like a multiple of 7 also, and 42 is a multiple of 7, and then the typewriter that he uses is a German typewriter.
Okay,
that's where they're getting the Holocaust from. But I'm thinking, I wouldn't be surprised if 42 was in there to kind of be a tie-in to a racial thing, because it is kind of like Jack even does talk about the white man's burden.
Yep, yep.
So I wouldn't be surprised if 42 was a reference to Jackie Robinson and race, because the Danny. Why did I just draw a blank on Danny? I just said it a minute ago. Because Danny is wearing a thing that says 42.
A 42 jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I don't like it's not a Robinson jersey, of course, but it's supposed to be like, you know, the kind of generic, like, oh, it's a baseball thing that you get for kids, but it has the number 42 on it.
It has the 42. Yeah, which,
and
42.
Then
42 is synonymous with Jackie Robinson.
Exactly. And then he's the one that befriends Scatman. And right. And he has that connection with him, too.
Right. And the later in the movie, you know, Jack and the ghost, or, well, whatever you want to call him, of the other caretaker, Delbert Grady, discuss race as well.
That's right, yeah.
Jack discusses it with the bartender. You know, that's when he's talking about the white man's burden.
Right.
And then Delbert Grady also brings up, he brings up Scatman, but it's not so much that he brings him up, but he calls him a nigger, which is a little, you know, it's really kind of like pointing out their hatred of other people.
Yeah.
And so it's not just like, oh, well, you know that black hook. Like, he makes it a point to put him down.
Right.
Which, I mean, I definitely can see, you know, race definitely plays a big part in the movie, despite the fact that all the characters, besides Scatman, are white.
Yeah.
And Scatman's in the movie for about 10 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah, he's the only one. And another time that they pointed out 42 is when it's on his license plate, Scatman's license plate that he has driving up.
Hmm. But see, that to me, that could also be a Robinson thing, especially where it's Scatman's license plate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I never heard anything with the 42 before.
Well, yeah, they were bringing it up as a thing. And another guy, one of the guys, it might have been the moon landing guy, said, and I think he even goes, you know, I might be stretching this here, but 2 times 3 times 7 is 42. And you're like, yeah, I think you are grasping at straws here. And he's like, look, I might be, but it's true that it does equal that. And then they go into a whole thing about why it's 237.
Yeah.
You're going to groan at this one again, but Cosmos too. Because 237.
Cosmo.
No, it's good for this because you're going to be really pissed off by this. 237,000 miles is the mean distance from the Earth to the Moon. So that proves that he faked moon landing footage.
Are you kidding me?
That's what he says.
That is so stupid.
Because apparently they said that apparently the hotel at the time said that they had a room 217, but they didn't want it to be 217, which it is in the book, because they were afraid that then, like, people wouldn't want to stay in that room.
Okay.
But if you call the hotel, they don't have a room 217. But the thing is, they could have had a 217, and then since the movie came out 30 years ago, they could have renumbered everything.
That's true. It doesn't have to stay that way after the movie.
Yeah, they could have redone it and been so. The guy's like, that's simply not true. That's a fabrication. He wanted it to be 237 to prove that he faked moon footage.
Oh yeah, that just makes so much sense.
but
what a jerk.
Oh, but the other thing about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Was that they were also saying that the typewriter was German?
Yeah, yeah.
So they were like, well, the typewriter's German, so clearly, you know. And there's a lot of references to eagles in there, which was a sign of the Nazis.
Yeah, yeah, true.
But eagles... But
eagles are a sign of America, too.
Yeah.
And I feel like some Native American stuff, too.
Exactly. So I feel like
I don't really find that to be.
I feel like that's not really the case. The funny thing is, hang on, let me find their name here, because when I put stuff out there, somebody sent me a link. His name on Reddit is 2001 Space Odyssey. It's all.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's a big fan of it. So he might actually be somebody that we should talk to answer some of our questions about 2001. But he sent me a link with I think it's Jan Harlan. It's a guy, though.
Okay.
J-A-N. But he's, like, German, so I think he's, like...
Jan?
He sounds German, so yeah, maybe it's Jan. But he was Kubrick's producer for 30 years. And I think he was also actually, like, his brother-in-law or something.
Okay.
But they have, like, a brief interview with him. I'll put the clip up on Facebook because it's actually pretty interesting. But at one point, he's like, there's no logic to the movie. It's just a horror movie with ghosts, and it's scary. Like, there's not supposed to really be logic to it because one of the characters is the hotel, and it's, like, it's creating actions and doing things to these people. So there's a lot of logic in it. But he goes, you know, like, just to say that It was him explaining how he faked moon landing footage. It's just utter nonsense, and it's an insult. It's an insult to him and the people that went to the moon. And then he's like, and to say that it was about the Holocaust. Yes, we were working on a Holocaust picture for many years before that, and Kubrick was an expert on. Or he calls him Stanley, but he's like Stanley was an expert on it. He read every book possible about it. We were working on this movie that didn't happen, but it was not meant as a Holocaust movie. Now you could say that he did it subconsciously, but then you can say whatever the hell you want. So, and I was like, interesting. But he disproves like all the theories within just a few minutes. The clip is like 13 minutes long. He's like, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. That's bullshit.
Now, I'll say. I think that there's going to be some allusions to and ideas that he used in the movie that, despite the fact that the book and the movie are not similar, there's going to be some carryover.
Yeah.
And I definitely think the Indian thing is one of those that carried over from the book. Because the book was very detailed in how things looked, and the hotel especially, just because the hotel really was a character, and it was Stephen King was extremely descriptive. Now, one thing that I'll say about the book, and what Stephen King says about the book, is that it's about being an alcoholic, which the movie, I do not feel that way, despite the fact that Jack is an alcoholic. And a lot of the movie is him dealing with his demons.
Yes, but not that demon.
Yes, I mean, some of it is him dealing with repercussions of his alcoholism. And obviously you see him how badly he wants to drink and everything. But I don't think the movie's about being an alcoholic. Not the way the book is. The book is very much so about being an alcoholic.
Yeah. And the movie isn't. The movie has a lot of... See, I feel like it's just about dealing with... your internal demons, and about even being just being a bad person, whether you're an alcoholic or not, really.
Right. Well,
like, I almost get the sense that Jack Torrance in the movie version is he's just a bad guy, and he almost is like the hotel and the ghosts make him think, convince him that he's drinking. So then in his mind switches and it's like, oh, I'm drinking so I can let my demons loose now. And that's when he kind of starts to spiral out of control.
I agree somewhat about it being about just being a bad dude. To an extent, the thing with Jack's an interesting character because especially in the movie Jack, you're right. Jack's a bad guy. But he doesn't want to be. I think that, I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily call it like a split personality type thing. Maybe a little bit. But I don't think he he generally, I don't think, wants to be a bad person. I think that he really does love his son and everything, but he can't help it. I really think that he just is a bad dude.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that's going to change that. And whether the alcohol brings it out in him, or maybe the lack of alcohol brings it out in him, it's going to come out. You know?
Right. Well, go ahead.
No. Yeah,
well, I was going to say, there was also a theory that, let me find the exact thing. Another one that I got message on Reddit was it's by this guy, Mr. Prestige. Because I also put it out on the Stanley Kubrick subreddit, so I found a couple good things there. He says, out of all the theories I've seen, one of the strongest, and it was raised by Bob Agger, and it's somewhere on the subreddit recently. I didn't get a chance to look at it, but it's about the bear and the party guest scene.
Oh, yeah.
The theory is the bear and the party guest scene mirroring possible abuse to Danny by Jack in the past. Danny is associated with bears throughout the film. The bear rug in the lounge disappears and reappears when Jack appears again, which I didn't look at, but then it also ties in. He's also shown reading a Playgirl magazine with an article about parents sleeping with their kids, which is true. There's a part where when he brings his family up, Jack's just hanging out in the lobby. And then Allman and whatever the other guy's name is that we couldn't remember.
You're right.
Come over to him, and he's just sitting there reading a magazine, and he's reading a Playgirl. And that particular magazine, because it was an actual one. It didn't just say Playgirl on it. It was an actual one that they grabbed, has an article in it about incest.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I guess the theory is basically that scene is a mirror of things that possibly could have happened between Jack and Danny in the past, because they do talk about physical abuse to Danny.
Right.
So it's not that far of a jump to say other things happened.
That's interesting. Mostly because it's almost all conjecture, but it doesn't mean that it's wrong, because yes, when you kind of bring all those things together and you kind of look at it and you say it could definitely mean that, but at the same time, there's nothing really in the movie that would make you think that outwardly.
Right.
There's no hint that he ever did anything except for hit him.
Right.
But I wouldn't say it's wrong. It just – I just don't think there's not as much to go on, but it's that's an interesting one.
Yeah, that one I think makes a bit of sense, because I was thinking about it, and you could actually, I think, hang on, let me go into the post, because I had a thought, and now I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, because you could kind of expand upon that one, too, and see other things in it, too. And granted, like, I'm doing the same thing that all the other conspiracy people go, and they're, like, reading into all these things.
Right.
But a lot of the movie is kind of about isolation, but then it's also about escape and getting away.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, because there is definitely the image of Danny with the Apollo 11 shirt on.
Yeah.
So you could kind of think that that's maybe about, you know, escape or exploration or getting out of there or something. So you could say that he wants to escape the environment that he's in.
Right.
Because of the situation that's going on, you could also take Jack's desire to murder his family as a means to end the cycle if he was also victimized like that as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Because he may think that Danny's going to be that the same way as him. So you could kind of think of it that way, but I don't think... I mean, that, like I said, that's not necessarily true, but that's...
It's
I think
not that's, necessarily wrong either.
Yeah, and that's a way to kind of interpret it, but I'm saying that, I'm not saying that that's a definitive way of looking at it.
Right. And you know what? In your discussion of that, you touched upon what I think is a very important topic or a very important reoccurring theme in the movie, and that is escaping your problems and escaping your demons without dealing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that's really the entire situation from start to finish is – and they don't go too in-depth in it in the movie, but basically Jack can't work. Jack had an incident where he assaulted, I think, a student at the school at the college he was working at in back in New England.
Now, do they say that in the movie or is that just in the book? I feel like they don't really say it in the
I feel like it, I don't. They definitely. I'm almost certain that they don't actually say it, but I feel like they insinuate that there is an issue of why they need to go, or why he needs to get away.
I think the way that I've always thought of it is that he's going there to escape his alcoholism, or something that happened because of that.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that was. That was what happened in the book where he ended up assaulting someone. He was drunk. But you know what? It doesn't really matter what it was. The whole idea is really that he was going to escape. And you're right. Probably in the movie it is insinuated more that he's going to just to try to get away from his alcoholic tendencies, which whatever he did while he was drinking, whatever, it's kind of a moot point. But he goes someplace. He leaves to go to get away, but becomes isolated in the process. And his problems never went away. He just moved, and his problems came with him.
Yeah.
And his problems are with himself and with his family. And then all he did was shut himself. Rather than escape, he shut himself in a hotel, surrounded by 10 feet of snow in every direction, with his problems, and it all came to a head.
Yeah.
And then the idea of escape again, but obvious, you know, escape from him, escape from what he's, you know, the monster he is. But yeah, I think that's definitely a reoccurring theme.
Yeah. Is the escape in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Did
any of them ever touch at all upon the maze scene when they go in the bush maze there
at the end?
No, in the beginning, or you know, half hour into it or whatever,
like where he's looking over the maze.
Yeah.
There's a thing in there, and I think this is something that the woman said, is that she hang on to your thought, because there may be a tangent here.
Okay.
Because some of her stuff ties together. Because her thing is some of like the disjointedness and like the window in the office, like I said, or the hallways. That once you get an idea of how the layout works, you know, there's all these doors, but then the doors are on the same wall that lead into like the ballroom. So where do those doors go? Or, like, there's something right on – there's, like, another hallway on the side of that. So where did those – like, these doors go and what happens here? And there's a lot of disjointedness in that whole thing.
Okay.
But one of the things that she also pointed out about the disjointedness was something that I picked up on. But I think that was just to fuck with us, and I don't think it was what she thinks it was, is when Danny's playing darts. That's the first time that he sees the twins, right?
Does he see them when he's playing darts?
Yeah, he turns around and he sees them there.
Okay.
And
okay.
To the left of them, there's a poster in the game room that's of a skier.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning, they're like, well, why don't you have skiing in the winter? Because it looks like this place would be perfect for it. And the guy's like, well, it's too expensive to get people up here and clear the roads.
Right.
So it's not practical for us to do that. And you're like, okay, well, like that makes sense. But then later on, you see the skiing poster, and you're like, well, wait a minute, I thought this wasn't a ski place. So why is there a skiing poster there?
Okay.
Which I feel is more like... The guy that is interviewing him is lying about why they don't do skiing, or like just lying about the building in general, and like you can't necessarily trust what he's saying. Because his office also has that impossible window. It shouldn't really exist because there's hallways right behind his office.
Yeah.
So. There's a lot of things surrounding him that become a kind of a lie. But she reads it as a minotaur. She sees it the way the legs are bent and the way the body is and the way one of the ski poles is. She sees that as a tail. So she sees the shape of a minotaur. And the minotaur lives at the center of the labyrinth. And the whole hotel and the maze are kind of its own labyrinth. But then you also see Jack be the minotaur. And because he kind of starts to get that bull stare.
Yeah.
Which he gets like when the snow first starts falling and they're in the maze.
Mm-hmm.
He has that stare as he's watching them out the window. Now yeah. That I see him kind of becoming more the animal. I don't know if that's necessarily he's becoming the minotaur. I don't know. That seems like a kind of a jump for me because I was thinking about something else. But she reads into that, and then there's a couple other things that she uses to back up her being like, oh, it's a minotaur thing.
Now I don't know how much I buy that. Not that they couldn't be using that. The skier thing, I don't know about that. But the idea that Jack is becoming – that they would use that kind of idea with Jack because, you know, they're in his maze now, in his labyrinth, and he's the Minotaur. I could see them going for that imagery.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's weird. The idea that, yeah, that I don't know, the skier thing, that just doesn't. I don't buy that. If anything, I would almost say that you could almost take it as, well, they don't really have skiing there. It's not real. So are the girls real?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe you could read into it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you could.
You know, be like, well, that's false. It's not, you know, that doesn't actually go on here. So is any of this actually going on here?
That's a good point. Yeah. Is any of this actually happening here? Or is it entirely possible that Jack, you know, went on the interview, bombed it, didn't get the job, and is now going insane somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean that's possible too. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but a lot of the things that do happen in the movie I don't necessarily believe are happening. I don't know. I mean, think about the whole, you know, when he's drinking at the bar with Lloyd,
yeah.
or the party or any of that. I mean, does any of that happen? I don't really know. It's...
Well, yeah, and then you jump to the end, and does anything... Is the picture real? Is the picture a fantasy? Is the picture of the original? Like, is the picture of Grady?
Yeah, is that Delbert Grady or whoever preceded him? Or-
yeah. Is that a previous caretaker, and then Jack was actually somebody else and just kind of ended up filling that role, and it was all just a visual play the whole time. Like, he was actually, like, he was actually supposed to be played by somebody else, but we didn't actually see them playing the role. You know right. What I mean? Like, he just kind of stepped into that role.
I don't know. And I know that one of the things that people hypothesize about The Shining is reincarnation. Mm-hmm. And I think that 95% of their thought that might be the case is based upon that last shot. And that's one of the hardest things. You know, I have theories about so many different movies and what they mean, but that shot, that last shot of The Shining, it's always confused the hell out of me. Yeah, and I don't know where the thing is it's too specific. I feel like it's too specific to just be there to fuck with you. I feel like there had to have been some intent behind it. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it really is just a fuck with us.
Well, one of the things that they talked about in the documentary that I kind of agreed with is a bit about the past repeating itself.
Yeah.
And that is a kind of a recurring thing.
Definitely.
Is the past repeating itself. So, in that case, is that just... That motorcycle's really loud, or whatever the fuck that is. I feel like it's too cold for a motorcycle, but whatever that guy's doing is really loud. It's probably just a big truck with a stupid muffler that he added on. He probably paid way too much for it. It was just like, it makes my car sound really loud.
Sounds cool. I'm gonna get so much pussy.
Makes it sound like my cock is really big.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that I accidentally fell on it when I was a kid and broke it.
Looks like an L.
Yeah. It just makes a 90-degree turn. Whenever I'm working on projects in my basement, trying to build a dresser, I just get real hard and I just put that down. Don't even need a T-square.
I was gonna say.
Just slap it right on the wood. Boom. Perfect right angle.
But anyways.
It makes sex really weird, but... We have to lay a 90-degree angle at work. It's really uncomfortable. I
hate myself.
I don't know why I'm telling you all this.
Can we get back to the muffler?
I just feel like he's leaning out of his... He's leaning out of his truck, talking to whoever's in the next car at the stoplight.
Can you imagine pissing in a urinal with a dick like that?
You gotta stand like you're facing... You're facing the other guy. The guy's like, what's your problem? Nothing. Like, what I gotta do.
Why are you staring at me? Like, my dick goes that way.
You always have to use the stall.
Yeah, you really would.
Probably like the handicap, too, just to make sure you had enough room.
Ugh.
But yeah, I just imagine rolling down the window and be like, hey, what's up? Hey. Check out this muffler. My dick's a 90-degree angle.
It's really loud. Chicks love it. Unlike my dick, they hate it.
They're very confused when they get down there.
Can you imagine? Like, he opens up his pants. He's just like, oh, yeah, time for a blowjob. And then it's just like this 90-degree angle bent wiener.
And they're just like, I don't even know what to do with this. I don't. I'm not sure.
Yeah. How do you give that a hand job?
Like, they try to fix it. Like, all girls are like, oh, like, they like try to pull it. And he's like, oh, no, don't pull it that way.
You're going to break it again.
Maybe that'll fix it.
Maybe it resetting a bone.
Yeah, they got it. He's like, well, it's already started to heal, so we just got to fix it.
He pulls down his face like, you reset my bone.
Ner, do it. Do it now. What were we talking about before that truck?
The picture, the last shot of.
Oh, I think that's to show history repeating itself. I think that's just like to give us the idea that it's repeating itself. Because you really, he establishes that you can't trust anything that you see in there.
Right.
And that everything's, you can't trust anything that you see in there, but everything's kind of there to give you a clue for something else or give you an idea. So I'm thinking it's just, because they also say, like, he's talking to Grady in the bathroom, and he's like, and Jack Nicholson's like, yeah, I have. He just kind of, you see him just kind of accept it, and he's like, yeah, I have been. And I think it's just like, it's history just kind of repeating itself again. And he's reliving whatever happened with the previous, the caretaker that went crazy before.
Grady.
Yeah. So with that, I think it's like the final nail in the coffin to be like, this movie's also about like history repeating itself, and don't do that.
Right. Now, I want to touch upon one scene.
Okay.
That is always perplexed me. And not in the way that the other scenes perplex me, whereas I'm not sure of meaning, or I'm not entirely sure if like the ghosts are real or something.
Okay.
I think you'll know what I'm getting at. It's the scene where the ghosts or the whatever's in the hotel cross the line from being possibly imagined to actually having an effect on the characters. And that is when Jack is locked in the dry storage room.
Mm-hmm.
And Grady comes to the door and unlocks it for him. That scene has always boggled my mind because at that point, I'm no longer sure what they're going for. Or not what they're going for, but it's like, I don't know. It kind of, it's not, it's, the whole movie kind of straddles this line of ambiguity where you're like, is he crazy? I don't know. Are the ghosts really there? I don't know. Like, can Danny really see ghosts? Can he see the future? You know, all this stuff where it's like, it's very ambiguous. But that one scene, I won't say don't like it. It doesn't take me out of the movie, obviously. I mean, it's still, like I said, it's in my top 10 favorite movies. I'm just not sure what to say. I'm just not sure about that scene. I don't know what to think.
Well, there's a touched on it in the documentary too, and this is one of the things that I would also kind of almost find believable is. Because to me, okay, first, to me, I always have felt like there are ghosts physically interacting in the hotel. And that scene that you're talking about is the first time that they directly do something when a character is right there. But before that, there are things like when Danny's riding around and then he sees the 237 is unlocked and it has the key in it.
It's true.
Like, why? Like, how did the key get there? How? Why is the room unlocked?
That's true.
You know, there's other things that, well, how does this work? And it almost also seems like people are being guided throughout the building in a weird way. Cause again, of the floor plan not quite working out, and like Danny's ride on the big wheel.
Mm-hmm.
The first time is like, it makes perfect sense because he just rides in a big circle on the first floor.
Yeah.
But then the second time he takes this weird turn, but still almost ends up where he would have if he was doing the circle. But that, it like, it doesn't quite work out.
Right. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
The last time they literally just show him going to the end of the hall. He turns and then he's on another floor.
Yeah.
So there's stuff like that where I think, is it possible that the hotel is the ghosts or demons or whatever are doing these things? And I've always taken it as that they are actually doing these things and that they are physically interacting with stuff.
Okay.
I like the first time I think I saw it, it does kind of walk that line where you're just like, is it in his imagination? Is it not? But then the more that happens, I'm just like, no, there are definitely ghosts here. Like, there have to be. There's too much weird stuff going on in the hotel. Like, there is an energy or a ghost or something. You know, maybe right. It's just that there's an energy in the hotel that's doing this stuff. But the other thing that they touch on is Danny throughout trying to actually kill his father? Because of the way the scene is cut with him shining right before, does Danny actually let him out? Because he sees into the future and knows that his father's going to end up dying.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's...
Like, they always say that Danny's telepathic, but maybe he's also telekinetic, or he is tapping into the energy and having the energy of the hotel unlock the door.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I've always thought about that scene. And, well, not just that scene, but one thing that maybe might lead me to believe that Jack can, at the very least, manipulate or have the ghosts do, or the spirits or anything like that work in his favor. And that is that I think Jack can also shine, but he doesn't know it.
Okay.
And that's where Danny gets it from. I think that he also has the power to see things and to understand things. Maybe he's not as in tune with it, but I think he has a little bit of that as well.
Now, is that what you were going to bring up before about the maze too? Because when he's looking at the maze, they do that shot and then you can see them in the maze.
Yes.
Okay.
That's kind of where I was thinking of that too, because I think Jack has a power beyond what he really understands, and not that Danny understands it either, but I definitely think that he's got a little bit of it. Wendy doesn't have anything. I don't think she. Now, that being said, it does come to a point where she sees some shit towards the end, but it's at the end. It's like when all hell's breaking loose.
Yeah.
But she doesn't pick up on any subtleties. So I don't think she's got any ability to do that, but Jack, I'm pretty sure does.
Yeah, that's something that I had thought of before too. Yeah, that's a good point. I wondered that before, but then I kind of dismissed it. But you know what, now that you're saying it again, I think you might be right.
And also remember before, and you know, maybe this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with him shining, but remember when he's talking to Wendy about how he's having deja vu about being at the hotel? And he was like, I've had deja vu before, but this was crazy. It was almost like I'd been here before. or something like that.
Yeah. So he's kind of subconsciously tapping into his thing, whereas Danny is aware of it. So Danny can almost protect himself from just the energy of the hotel tapping into him. But the hotel just kind of, you know, Jack taps into the hotel, and then the hotel just kind of takes over him.
Right, exactly. And I think that, yeah, I don't Jack cannot control it. And obviously Danny can't control it as much as he'd like to, I'm sure. But Jack, it's like with him, I feel like it's a two-way street. And I think that he can kind of see things and he can feel things and everything, but the opposite is true, where the bad spirits, the demons, whatever they are, will go his way and can take and almost like take him over.
Yeah, exactly. That's what. Yeah.
So now,
I wonder if. Or sorry, go ahead and finish it.
I was just gonna say, I think that that's a big part of him. Maybe getting out of that room. I don't know.
I think that's definitely a possibility too. Yeah, one that I hadn't thought of, because I just assumed that it was kind of the hotel letting him out, because that's what the hotel wanted. But I wonder now that you're saying it like that, if that's the reason he develops a drinking problem. Because he has, to some level, the shine, but he doesn't really understand it.
Right, and to cope.
Yeah, and to deal with it, he develops this drinking problem. But yeah. But now he's not drinking.
Right, and he has nothing to bring himself down.
Yeah.
Back to where he feels comfortable, was with the drink in his hand.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could definitely see that.
Now, the other two, a couple other things that I just thought of, because I forgot, going back to the theory that he was, that Danny was like sexually abused by Jack, that theory. Two other things that I thought. One is that his imaginary friend Tony lives in his mouth.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I put that together, I was like, if he was going to create an imaginary friend because of this thing that he went through, that would kind of make more sense. You know, especially considering the fact that the bear is going down on the party guest.
Maybe.
When Wendy sees him.
Yeah.
Other thing I remembered about that scene, though, and I mentioned it in the best of, because all of a sudden it occurred to me, but the bear's got, I guess he's wearing those, you know, this onesie footy pajamas, but the ass flap is down.
Yeah, I never noticed that.
Yeah, the ass flap is down, so that seems a little weird, too. like either there was somebody else in the room, or... like, you know, something else, like other stuff was going on besides just, you know, just getting blown. Now, the other thing, though, is if you assume that that's what that theory means, because that's the only thing that Wendy sees. But no, she also sees the party guest.
She sees the guy. No, and then she sees all the skeletons.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
And the elevator.
That's right. Okay, she does see a bunch of stuff at the end. Because I was going to say, that's one of the only things that she sees. But I was wondering if that, her seeing that, is her realizing that, of like actually realizing and admitting to herself what might have happened.
Right. Okay. So basically, maybe she kind of knew it, but she didn't want to admit it to herself.
Yeah, like she had her suspicions, but she, because the evidence just showed that there was physical abuse, she just left it at that.
Well, that's definitely not a bad theory. I don't know how the other stuff fits into it, though. Because it's – the fact that there is the other stuff that she sees kind of almost takes away from that, because it's like, oh, she goes through this 5-minute part of the movie where she sees a bunch of fucked up shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, that's just one of the fucked up shit things that she sees. But
it's kind of like if this. Go ahead.
If it was on its own, you'd be like, oh, okay, it has more meaning then. But I'm not saying that it has to take away from the meaning, but, you know, it's just kind of like, you know. If I saw one dude get shot in the head, I'd be like, oh, my God. If I saw four dudes get shot in the head in a row, by the fourth guy, I'd be like, all right. I'd be like, it's fucked up, but it wasn't as fucked up as the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around that part. Cause yeah, she doesn't, all of a sudden she does start seeing stuff, I guess because of what's going on and with Jack, that's making like the energy stronger. And it gets to a part where it's so strong that then.
That even someone who can't shine is seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's kind of what I take from it is that, it is now everything has gotten so big and come to such a head that it's impossible to ignore.
Yeah.
And that's very different from the book where they all pretty much see it. Now, Wendy doesn't see it as much as them, but they all experience weird shit. In the book and stuff well before things start going to shit. But I don't know. I definitely think that Jack shines, but just has zero control over it.
Yeah. He never dealt with it, I guess.
No, definitely not.
But maybe some idea. And again, that's why he's trying to kill him. Cause he's like, well, I want to end the cycle. And not repeat the past. Like, right. He doesn't want his son to go insane.
Yeah.
So I guess we probably want to wrap up. And I wanted to touch on a couple of the other things that people had said or pointed out. Yeah, I think we had like 15 minutes on the other one. So, yeah, did you say you had your own theory or was that Jack could shine? Because you had said to me that you were like, I have my own theory that I want to talk about. Was that the Jack Shine
thing? Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that was kind of...
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that overall I have a theory. I don't know. I think that's one thing I love about the movie is that I have such kind of a bunch of stuff thrown together that I think might be, you know... I'm never to the point with that movie where I am unwilling to listen to new ideas about what it could be.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is that the movie definitely has many levels to it and many things going on.
Right.
It has many themes going on. It has many many layers to even each scene, many things that plays to different different theories. Yeah. And stuff. So
absolutely.
So we heard many ridiculous theories. One theory that was mentioned to me, which I had not heard about ever, came from Jesse P.S. of Pod Awful, another podcast, podawful.com, I think is their website. My theory has always been that The Shining is really about Mexican food. If you look in a lot of still frames, you will see hidden Mexican food dishes amongst the props and scenery. There is actually a pretty good analysis of this if you Google it. I tried Googling it. I could not find it. But I tried. I looked for it. One of the more famous examples is in the scene where we first see the creepy twin girl. One of them is actually a burrito.
Oh, okay.
I think you have to go frame by frame, but... I only had the DVD. Maybe if you go frame by frame on the Blu-ray, you can see where she turns into a burrito.
Yeah.
So I checked, though. I wasn't sure. I followed up with him because I was thinking about it, and there's the scene with the elevator and all the blood coming out. So I wasn't sure if that meant that Kubrick was pro-Mexican food or anti-Mexican food, because I can see it both ways. He said it was pro, and that that was not actually blood coming out of the elevator. It was enchilada sauce.
Oh, all right.
So that's another theory. I think I would actually give that more credit than the moon landing.
I like it better than the moon landing one.
I like it better than the moon landing one also. Somebody else, I'm trying to remember his name. I believe it's Matt from The Obsessive Viewer, obsessiveviewer.com. He has a podcast too, which is pretty good. Watches a lot of movies and TV shows, and then they just kind of dive in and talk about it. Kind of like what we do here, but they do it a little bit more serious than we do. We like to make a lot of dick jokes when we talk about stuff.
Yeah.
He has both a review of the documentary, which I will read an excerpt from in a minute, which because it was hysterical. But he also has a nice thing about the adaptation of The Shining from the book into the movie. I guess where is it? On here, the miniseries that they did, 97, with Steven Weber from Wings.
Oh yeah.
I guess that was a lot more faithful of an adaptation.
Yes, from what I understand.
I have not seen it, but it was extremely faithful, and apparently Steven Weber did a really good job in it. So I kind of want to check it out now, because I'm surprised. I can't imagine the guy from Wings doing that good of a Descend into Madness, but I'll check it out.
Yeah, he doesn't turn quite Jack Nicholson insane, but
he does go kind of insane.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then in his review of Room 237, I almost said 231, 237, the moon landing guy points out something that the guy said. Now, this is from his review. In the scene where Danny enters the room, there's a close-up of the key tag that says room number 237. The interviewee implies that Kubrick intentionally capitalized room and the letter N to force a subliminal association in the viewer's mind between the words room and moon. He actually says there's only two words you can come up with that have those same letters in them, and they are moon and room. And that's true. That's actually what the interviewee said. But then the obsessive viewer points out, personally, I could only see the word moron. And I enjoyed that quite a bit.
That is pretty good.
That's
terrible.
Yeah, that I was just like, okay, now we're really stretching for stuff. We're doing that, and 2 × 3 × 7 = 42. Wonderful. The other really cool thing about that movie, which was kind of a cool concept, was some website out there. I think it was a guy called Mastermind was his name, and he didn't want to be interviewed for the movie. But I guess he has a bunch of stuff out there about The Shining. But he just had a quote that said, the only way to see The Shining is backwards and forwards at the same time. So these guys decided that in order to, like, as, kind of inspired by that, and then just as a fun, like, crazy way to see them simultaneously run the movie backwards and forwards at the same time.
Okay.
And then just superimpose them on each other. It's actually pretty cool. And there's a lot of things that line up, like because the opening shot of them going over the water then lines up with the Overlook Hotel July 4th ball 1921.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of almost looks like a postcard or like an invitation.
Yeah.
And then as they go through, there are certain things that line up where you're like, oh, like it's kind of paralleling this scene. Now, when they did it, it almost lined up perfectly, which I don't think was intentional, and they don't really say that it was intentional. Almost want you to believe that Stanley Kubrick was like, I want this movie to line up perfectly backwards and forwards.
Huh.
But I don't think he went to that extent. Because there are a couple parts that almost match up too well where you're like, it would have taken a lot of planning to do this, and I would believe more that it was by accident than on purpose. But he probably started with the idea of, I want certain things to parallel each other throughout the movie.
Right.
And I can see Stanley Kubrick trying to do that.
Yeah, I can see that too.
But yeah, it lines up pretty well. But they don't get to that till the end of the movie.
That's interesting. A lot of good stuff. Honestly, we could probably talk about The Shining for 10 episodes if we wanted to. There's a lot going on. Love it.
Maybe we'll revisit it sometime, or maybe next year or something we can do, or like on the anniversary of whenever it came out. It came out in May, so maybe we'll do it in May. Maybe we can do like a tweet along or something.
I was gonna say that might be a cool thing to do because, that's one that I would definitely want to do it too.
Yeah, get some maybe get some people online involved and do some kind of a tweet along. They might even do something like that, so maybe we can join in on it even.
Right.
But we'll have to look at that. All right. So that's been a Butcher Wrong. I am Keith Bordella.
I'm Greg DiNicola.
Remember, no regrets. And if you ever need help, don't call Scatman. He's gonna die.